Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. With the Trump presidency, we have seen the return of great power politics with a vengeance. Global institutions and international law are being sidelined. Ideological crusades now absent. Does this make the world a better place? I guess it depends where you are in the pecking order. Crosstalking the international order, I'm joined by my guest, John Mearsheimer in Chicago. He is a professor in the political science department at the University of Chicago. And in Rome, we cross to Alistair Crook. He is a former British diplomat. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Professor Mearsheimer, if I can go to you first in Chicago. I'm calling this program the new old paradigm. You've introduced the concept of great power politics to countless number of people around the world through your books. So are we going back to something? Are we going to something new? Is it a combination? Or we have no idea? Professor Mearsheimer.
Well, I think it's very important to understand that during the Cold War, when we all grew up, we lived in a bipolar world, and there were two great powers on the planet, the Soviet Union and the United States. And therefore, you had great power politics. In about 1991, when the Soviet Union collapsed, and we moved into a period which is called the unipolar moment, by definition, there was only one great power on the planet, which was the United States. So you couldn't have great power politics because there was only one great power. But that unipolar world went away, I think, in about 2017. And you moved into a multipolar world where you had three great powers, the United States, China, and Russia. And once you move from unipolarity to multipolarity, you're back to great power politics. And it's, in a way, a different kind of great power politics in the sense that during the Cold War, when we all grew up, there were only two great powers, but today there are three great powers. So the dynamics of the relations between those three great powers is going to be somewhat different than what we saw in the Cold War. But there's no question, when you look at what's happening around the world, the great power politics is back with a vengeance.
Alistair, you wrote in your Conflicts Forum weekly comment that was published yesterday, you wrote at the very, very end, "Everything is business in Trump's geopolitics." Explain that to our viewers.
Yes. Well, we're in this period. I think it's been an extended period of nihilism. It really goes back quite far, the period that we've moved to. And we were warned by Nietzsche when he wrote about it, that the loss of values, the loss of the values that we see now lost, we have that explained very clearly in Davos. When you lose those values, you lose meaning and you lose purpose. And ultimately, you end up with no moral architecture. There's no moral architecture by which to navigate your life or to navigate geopolitics in this. And I think what we saw in Davos, and it was said by Mark Carney, but it was said also by Howard Lutnick and even Larry Fink, the head of BlackRock. And they said, you know, we are now in simply an era of the exercise of power without international law, without international values. So where are we going? Well, there isn't an answer because actually we don't have a reply, or at least one certainly that has been given there, either to the question of reaching the dead end of our period of moral values, or we don't have an answer to the economy because it's the economics that's driven us further and further to the war. Structurally, the contradictions in our economy are too great to find a solution in this. So that we have the pragmatic solution of the Europeans, which is to, if you like, try and reduce dependence on the hegemon, on the United States, and to do that by getting closer to China in the hope that that gives them, first of all, more leverage, but probably it is nothing more cynical than really the hope that by getting closer to China, they can outlive this Trump era, and the Trump will finally go. And for the main part now, so nothing new. What we're going to see is an ad hoc group of states cooperating together in little, if you like, in little cells, and ignoring the great power, trying to ignore as best they can the great powers.
But that's a big question. Can you ignore the great powers, as Professor Mearsheimer has presented to us? Professor Mearsheimer, the United States has made it very clear with its new national security strategy and members of the administration how they want to move forward. We have the example of Greenland, the kidnapping of Maduro, and we're going to talk later in the program about Iran. We know what Trump and his people, more or less what they want to do. How they'll do it is very unpredictable. But what about the other great powers? How is China and Russia supposed to react to this?
Well, I think if you look carefully at what Trump is up to, he's not interested in picking a fight with China or with Russia. You want to remember that in his first term and now in his second term, he's gone to great lengths to improve relations with the Russians. He wants to have good relations with Putin. It's not that easy to do because of the Europeans and because of the European war. But Trump is not interested in having contentious relations with either China or Russia. What Trump is interested in focusing on is basically pushing around or beating up weaker powers, the smaller powers in the international system. And you see this with regard to Venezuela, you see it with regard to Canada, you see it with regard to Iran, and you see it with regard to how he treats the Europeans. I like to argue that Trump is a classic bully. He doesn't pick on people, or he doesn't pick on countries that are roughly in the same category as the United States. He's not interested in picking a fight with Russia or China. He wants to pick fights with the Europeans, smaller countries in the Western Hemisphere, and smaller countries in the Middle East. He likes to use military force if he can get away with using it quickly and easily. He likes to use America's enormous economic leverage on weaker countries, and you see this all the time. But that's basically what Trump is all about. It's very important to understand that Trump is basically a unilateralist. Mm-hmm. He's not interested in international law. He's not interested in international institutions. He's interested in acting as a single individual who can do pretty much anything he wants around the world, as long as he doesn't get into a war with another great power.
Well, Alistair, but it's still... go ahead, Alistair, jump in.
I agree with all that's just been said, except it seems to me to miss the main point. What is this contention about? Actually, it is all about geofinance more than geopolitics. It is about preserving the dollar hegemon. It is about getting the inflow of large sums of money into the United States to prevent the bond market from crashing and causing a major crisis in the market. So the contention is not just to get into a fight, I think, with the state or that state, but to bring compliance as much as possible by states, by using tariffs, using, threats. Exactly, the bullying that Professor Mearsheimer has just talked about, but is basically orientated towards the financial ends of Trump, which is to try and save the American economy from some form of crisis.
Well, Professor Mearsheimer, is that a practical and a strategy on the part of the United States, and will it engender positive results? I mean, forcing countries to trade. Last time we saw that was Comic-Con during the Cold War. Professor Mearsheimer.
Well, it's very difficult to say how successful President Trump will be at this point in time. Just going back to our discussion of international law and liberal values that Alistair was talking about in the beginning, it's very important to understand, I think, that President Trump is a radical departure from all of his predecessors. Virtually every president in modern times has been deeply committed to using international law and international institutions to foster American interests. We've seen institutions and international law as being in our national interest, in a way of preserving America's position as the most powerful state in the international system. But President Trump has no interest in international law or international institutions. He wants to destroy institutions. He wants to ignore international law. And with regard to international values, which Alistair was talking about, those are the famous liberal values that almost every president has paid great attention to. In many cases, we've merely paid lip service to those liberal values because we've tended to, on occasion, act in brutal ways. But we understood that even when we acted in brutal ways, we should try to justify what we were doing in terms of liberal values. That's not President Trump. He doesn't give a hoot about liberal values any more than he gives a hoot about international law or international institutions. And in this sense, you cannot underestimate how radical he is. And then the question which you ask is, will this turn out well? My answer is it won't. But it's hard to say for sure at this point in time.
Okay, Alistair, I have to go to a hard break, but after that hard break, we're going to see hear your reaction to Professor Mearsheimer's statements there. In lieu of that, we're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the international order. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the international order. Okay, let's go straight back to Rome. Alistair, you'd like to reply to Professor Mearsheimer? Go ahead.
Yes, indeed, because I think, you know, if there was a message from Davos, which isn't about the future or the new era, but what it actually did, and this is the one positive element that came out of it probably, was that people said, well, not only those values and the international order, it turns out they were always fake. And then we never really believed in it, and we just used it where it was in our interest. And where we've arrived to today, I think, and this was the point of the, you know, the rupture at the end, what people talk about the rupture, is this long path of nihilist postmodernism has actually ended up because it doesn't work economically and it doesn't work politically any longer. And that there has to be, therefore, some change. And Trump is radically different, as you say, in using simply to use strength and force to try and achieve it. But I say, I still insist that basically he's trying to do that because of the crisis in the system, the crisis in the economy, the need to prevent a real problem on the debt market. In other words, I'm saying all geopolitics under Trump has become the politics of the debt market. And the need for the United States, if you like, to have larger inflows of hard revenue, either to boost, if you like, a very fragile financial system, or to invest in artificial intelligence, big companies like this. But he needs to it. That's why we've had this period of the shakedowns, doing the shakedown of Gulf states, going around Southeast Asia, shaking them down. You're going to have tariffs put on you unless you give America a few trillion of dollars.
Yeah, but that's a shakedown. If you don't comply, then you can be on the receiving end of violence, presumably.
Well, of course, this is, we're moving back in. Well, I mean, I won't call it monster, but I mean, I live in Italy, so I understand mafia quite well about how they operate. This is, you know, what's called the break your leg offer to someone. You know, would you like to do this? Or if not, we can break a leg. I mean, you know, this is basically
nice little restaurant you have here. It would be a pity something happened to it. Professor Mearsheimer, if we could switch gears to what's front and center, Trump's stratagem or gambit or whatever we want to describe it about Iran. We have an armada, flotilla of warships moving towards going into the Persian Gulf. I mean, what does Trump want to achieve here? Because I think there's a growing consensus that he's looking for an easy win, a quick win, in and out. Is that possible when it comes to Iran?
No, especially when you consider what his goals are. I mean, his goals here are, number one, regime change. He wants to topple the regime in Iran, and he wants to then break apart Iran. This is basically the long-term Israeli goal in Iran and basically American foreign policy in the Middle East, especially with regard to Iran, is driven by what Israel wants. And Israel wants to do to Iran what has happened to Syria, break it apart, fragment it, so it's not in any way a threat to Israel. So the question you have to ask yourself is, can the Trump administration cause the regime to collapse in Tehran, and can it then break Iran apart? And by the way, we tried to do this between December 28th and January 14th of this year. We played a key role in fomenting those protests and then fueling those protests. The United States and the Israelis were hard at work between late December and January 14th of this year trying to topple the regime in Tehran. We failed. And I think if the United States uses military force against Iran today, tomorrow, or the next day, we're going to fail again. I don't think we can topple the regime with military force. So I don't know what the Trump administration is going to do. They're talking about using massive military force, slamming Iran, but they can't tell a plausible story about how it produces regime change. So I think in a very important way, the United States is checkmated.
Yeah, in many ways, Alistair, the administration can't even legitimize its own strategy or strategies. Is it the nuclear program? Is it missiles? Is it surrogates in the I mean, it changes all the. Oh, and the protests, of course. At one point, Trump seemed to care more about protesters in Iran than in Minnesota. Basically, the same question to you, Alistair, because, I mean, America's Gulf allies are dead set against this. They don't want to participate in it because it'll be blow back against them. So, I mean, both of you are great scholarly men. I thought great powers acted rationally. This sounds extremely irrational to me. Alistair.
Well, you know, but I mean, Trump's geopolitics is often not rational. It is deliberately. I mean, what he wants is a psychological advantage, you know, a big win, a standout moment, the headlines, the intention focused on him. Much more than he's concerned about the practicalities. I mean, look at Venezuela. I mean, no one can really say that's been a great success. But, you know, he got the headlines. He got the moment. But I would say, you know, there's a huge intelligence or a cognitive failure, perhaps one should say, in the West about Iran, because the insurrection on which they had counted failed. It failed very early on, with the shutdown of Starlink and the internet. But what is more important, and even the Israeli press have really noticed this, this supposed pressure and the unrest, where were the defections? Where is the organized opposition? Did we see any of the majlis defect? Did we see the army, defections from the army, from the IRGC, from the Vazij? No, it didn't happen. In fact, the country gathered together around it. It is another case of, you know, this false assumption. Iran is a house of cards. Russia is a house of cards. We only need to give it one great big push and the whole pack of cards would fall. They do not do their due diligence. They do not do their calculations correctly. They just go along with a narrative that is favorable and say, oh, yes, Iran, you know, the Ayatollahs are unpopular. They don't know. They should have seen the popular support that followed that brief period of the insurrection. Huge demonstrations in Tehran and many other cities, million plus coming out in support of the of the Iranian Republic. I mean, it was another great strategic error. And the only thing that can happen now is to compound that error by making an attack, because Iran has said very clearly two things. One is that America has asked, would you be willing to accept a token attack on you? And you would reply in a token way. And Iran says, no, we refuse that utterly. Then Israel was in touch with Iran. I've been in touch with Tehran. I know the details of this. Israel was in touch to say, look, we're not going to get involved in this attack. It's going to be just America. We're going to stay out of it if you promise not to attack us. And Iran replied, no way. The first attack on us by the United States, we will attack Iran and American military bases and shut the...
But this doesn't make any real sense to me. Professor Mearsheimer, so if the Israelis say they don't want to get involved in this, the Gulf countries say they don't want to get involved in this, so why is Trump doing this? I thought it was all for Israel. Israel doesn't want to get involved in this. I mean, this is mystifying to me, because if Trump is fears being accused of being taco again, and the Israelis know they probably will never have an American president like Trump again. That's why the stakes are so high, because they may never have another American president will be so forward in forwarding their interests. That's why I think we should all be very, very worried right now. Professor Mearsheimer.
Well, I just want to add to what Alistair said. It's important to understand that in the 12-day war involving Iran on one side and Israel and the United States on the other side that took place in June of last year, this is June 2025, by the end of that conflict, the Israelis were in real trouble because the Iranians were firing ballistic missiles at Israel that the Israelis could not shoot down. And every day, the situation was getting worse for the Israelis. And it was the Israelis who put pressure on Trump to end the war after 12 days. It wasn't the Iranians. And many people criticized the Iranians at the time for agreeing to a ceasefire, because it looked like the balance of power was shifting in Iran's favor, and they had the upper hand. Well, the situation today has not changed. The fact is that Iran has a huge number of ballistic missiles that can do enormous damage to Israel. So what Israel wants is to stay out of the fight and let the United States do the heavy lifting. The Iranians, as Alistair correctly pointed out, understand what's going on. And the Iranians have said that if the United States alone attacks Iran, that Iran will nevertheless retaliate against Israel. This is why on January 14th of this year, when Trump looked like he was going to attack Iran, Netanyahu asked Trump not to attack Iran. You want to think about it. On January 14th of this year, the Israelis played a critical role in convincing Trump not to attack Iran. And it was because Israel is vulnerable. So in a very important way, that serves as a deterrent today from causing the United States to attack Iran, because Israel will get hit.
Well, that, I think at this moment in time, we have a checkmate situation. We'll see how it develops here. Gentlemen, it was a pleasure having you both on at the same time. I'm truly, truly grateful. And that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Chicago and in Rome. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.